This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. How well maintained is the playground in your neighborhood? If you'd like to have a new basketball court built or request for repairs to existing amenities, do you know who to call? Here to tell us what you can and cannot do with your community park is Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran. Rajiv, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Firstly, are all parks and playgrounds properties of state governments?
Hi. Okay. So if you look at parks and playgrounds, by and large, most of them are owned by the state government. They're basically state land, and while they're owned by the state, they are managed by their respective local councils. So if you look at the parks around PJ, most of them are owned by the state but managed by MPPJ, the local council. However, not all parks are local. There are some private parks. One of the bigger private parks would be like Taman Subang Ria in Subang Jaya, next to Sime Darby Medical Center. So that will be owned by Sime Darby. So there are a few parks here and there that are owned privately, but by and large, most parks are owned by the state.
So public funds then would generally not be used to maintain these privately owned?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
Those are maintained by their respective owners.
There are some resident associations that have taken up the responsibility of maintaining their neighbourhood parks, which include charging fees for them. Is this legal?
Okay, so in cases where resident associations come in, I think we need to then clarify the difference that we have between resident associations and management corporations. Now, in some cases, we have these strata properties where the parks are part of the parcel of land, part of the main title, so part of the strata body, and then the management corporations have jurisdiction and ownership to maintain those parks and to charge fees accordingly. So in those cases, then yes, it's perfectly legal for the management corporation to take care of the facilities and to even allow outsiders to use them and to charge them fees. But in cases where resident associations come into play, they're mostly related to landed properties where the parks are not owned as part of the title, as part of the master title, but instead these are state lands, and in those cases the cost of maintenance is normally borne by the local council, as well as any fees that are to be derived, such as for renting the football field, will be collected by the local council.
Can residents who live near the park forbid outsiders, quote-unquote, from using park facilities?
Well, I mean, while I've heard of cases where that happens, especially when it comes to facilities like football, futsal, basketball, the locals that dominate the sports facilities would tend to chase away outsiders from using them. Technically, it is not legal. Those public parks are open to all and should be accessible to all. Having said that, there's this first come, first serve practice or convention, not written in law, but by convention. So if someone's already playing basketball in one of the neighborhood parks, you don't come and chase them away. It's a give and take, neighborly cooperation and sharing that comes into play. And in cases where the demand is just simply too high, I think that's where you start to see council stepping in and charging fees. And so that's where you have some basketball courts, especially the ones which have roofs, that may come under a rental scheme, by the council, like, 20 ringgit an hour or something like that, to manage the demand. Badminton courts in MPPJ, MPSJ, and so on do have the same challenge where the demand is so high as compared to the availability, the supply. And so that's when a booking scheme comes into play to manage the demand. And so for facilities that do not have that high of a demand, then it's just like a free-for-all where first come, first serve.
That stepping in that happens by the council, is it usually prompted by complaints or prompted by based on observation, what happens?
I think it's a mixture of both. I mean, yes, there definitely would be complaints that leads up to the council stepping in. So those complaints may not necessarily be from the residents. It could be from the players themselves. When they say that it's just too difficult to get through and whatnot. And oftentimes, council staffs are not strangers they also play football, they also play other sports, and so they also realize the difficulties faced. So that's where it's a mix of everything, and but these changes do not happen very frequently. Just certain football fields that are under booking schemes, say for example Road 10 football field in PGA Old Town, you have to book it in MPPGA to use it. So if there's a booking, then the person who has a booking definitely has priority to use it. On times or days that there are no bookings, then it's like first come first, if people are not chased away from the field. So same goes with like basketball courts and whatnot.
I live in a playground with a fairly popular basketball court. I wouldn't say it's you know, incredibly high demand, but it's high demand enough to cause a lack of parking spaces at night in particular. And that's obviously a frequent concern. It can lead to traffic congestion where non-residents park improperly, or really just if you live in a neighbourhood like mine where even, you know, something like five new cars entering the space is cluttering up an already crowded space. So is there a sort of middle ground to this, to the issue of parking?
So far, we do not see regulation coming in for that. In landed properties, I think landed estates, what you described, parking is more of self-regulation where people are expected to park properly, not to obstruct traffic, but the spaces are not regulated to say that these are for residents and these portions are for visitors and whatnot. So it's still on a self-regulating basis. I think council hasn't stepped in yet, but council could step in if a situation gets serious enough to warrant them to do so.
Where should one go to verify a resident association's legitimacy?
I think you're asking this in concern with the resident association taking claim of a playground, is that
Yes.
correct? So technically, resident associations should not have any stake over playground.
Right.
I mean, they should not claim ownership over playgrounds because unless it comes under a strata title, you know, a strata master title, that's when the management corporation has jurisdiction. The rest of them are owned by the state. So if you want to check ownership legitimacy, then check with the land office to see who owns the land, that particular plot of land is the technical place to go. But oftentimes you can also just check with your local council or your local councillor. They should know these answers too.
We're talking about managing parks and playgrounds today. If you've got any questions, give us a call. That number is 0377109000. You can also text 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, there are anecdotal reports of residents complaining about foreign workers congregating at certain parks after working hours, usually disguised as concerns about security, but one could, you know, sense a pretty decent strand of xenophobia running through that. Have you observed any xenophobic trends recently?
Oh, well, I'm maybe blessed that within my constituency, this isn't really raised. In fact, many other issues are raised far above this. But this may be some concerns. Maybe we can hear some call-ins today regarding this. But I would say that the parks are open to all. And just because they may be foreigners or not Malaysian, I shouldn't deprive them of the use of the park. However, there are some rules towards using the park, and everyone should adhere to them for the well-being of everyone. For example, certain playground equipment are only meant for children, children under 12, like say the swings or the slides, and then thus it should be kept as such. Now, when you have a 30-year-old man, be it a Bangladeshi or a Malaysian, using that, you deprive children of using it. Or you intimidate children away from using it. So there are some rules that should be adhered to, cleanliness of the park and whatnot, not causing disturbances. And those should be adhered to by all, not just foreigners, but Malaysians. But I don't see the need, nor do I think it is right for us to go to the extent to say, you know, foreigners, especially blue-collar foreign workers, you know, you're barred from public parks, you should not come in.
We have a call now from William. Good afternoon, William. Did you have a question?
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Good afternoon. Hi. I'm a reasonable regular at Gossing Hill, you know, where that is, in front of the playground and all that. Parking today is obviously quite difficult down there. Not enough car park. And previously, they used to allow on Saturday mornings and whatever not. Okay, it was easier to park. But nowadays, even Saturday mornings, apparently the guys are coming around putting summons and so on. Can that be solved or something?
All right. Thank you for the question. With regards to Gassing Hill, I think that was one of the examples where situation has got out of hand and council has stepped in. So somewhere at the end of 2014, due to a lot of complaints from the Resident Association of Section 5 of how cars were just parking all over the place, left, right of the road and the corners and causing congestion, and even the complaints of congestion from all road users because of the narrowing of roads by cars parking on both sides. So MBPJ, in discussion with myself, with the Resident Association, which a councillor for the area, decided on a compromise, not to go to the extreme, which was wanted by some residents in the area, to totally ban parking by the roadside, but to go for a compromise where we walk through the area, the roads that are nearby the Gassing Hill entrance, and the portions which were dangerous for cars to park on at certain corners or certain narrow parts of the roads, yellow lines were drawn. And at the same time, banners were put up and flyers were distributed back then to create awareness that don't park where the yellow lines are. You can park everywhere else. So some parts of the roads, like say Jalan Tanjung, some portions are really narrow, and so we only should allow parking on one side and not both sides so that traffic can still move. And in those cases, only the side which has a yellow line would summons be issued. So yes, enforcement happens on Saturdays and Sundays because that's the peak hour for visitors visiting Gassing Hill. And as long as they park anywhere but the yellow lines, they'll be fine. But if they park on the yellow lines, then that's where they will be summoned. And the only reason is because the yellow lines were just put there to ensure that the traffic can move smoothly through those stretches. And the yellow lines are not everywhere. The whole road was not painted yellow. Only the portions were extremely narrow or the corners that, you know, we just had to prohibit people from parking there. So I hope we can live with the compromise for the sakes of the people who want to hike. That, you know, technically, they should not be parking on the roadside where there's no parking box. We could not draw parking boxes because it does not meet the specifications or the width of the parking boxes. The road is just simply too narrow for that. But the compromise was we will not issue summonses where there's no yellow line. So I hope we can have the cooperation of everyone to just maybe park a little further. And if you're a bit, you know, if you come at a time when it's already filled up, we park a little further and not cause congestion for everyone.
I'm speaking today with Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gassing State Assemblyman. We're talking about managing parks and playgrounds. If you've got any questions for us, that number to call is 03-771-09000. Samuel, I see you're on the line. Please wait for a little bit. And you can also reach us by texting 016-201-9000 or tweeting us at BFM Radio. We'll be continuing the conversation after this. Good afternoon. You are listening to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gassing State Assemblyman. We're talking today about managing parks and playgrounds. Our phone lines are open and we have Samuel on the line. Good afternoon, Samuel.
Hi, Julian. Hi, Julian and Rajiv. Good evening. I'd like to ask regarding the legalness of Rukun Tetangga in a sense of building their rest house on state playground. Is that legal and is that actually... As residents, are we actually allowed to ask them not to place us on the playground?
Okay, thank you for the question. Basically, because the councils manage these public spaces, so the councils then decide how best to use it and how best to provide public amenities on it. The Rukun Tetangga cabin or a public hall or any other facilities, those are decided by council on a case-by-case basis. And technically, the council does have the authority to say yes to actually construct this if it deems that this is what the community wants or in the benefit of the community. So I'm not sure which area this case particularly is, but if the residents are not happy with that or they want the park to be constructed in a different manner, you should engage your local representatives, your state assemblyman, your councillor, to talk about it. Yes, the council does have the power to go in that direction if it deems that that's what the community wants.
There are other problems that have floated up when it comes to parks, which I suppose is true of any public space. You know, when you bring people together, you're bound to end up running into some difficulty. And The Star did a story about how Klanajaya Park is a popular spot for the LGBT community to meet and hook up over the last 15 years or so. How should local councils respond to a situation like this?
Well, I think that's quite a sensitive area to go into. The council does have jurisdiction to some extent. So the council maintains the facilities, ensures the grass is cut, decides whether we build a basketball court or a futsal court, and so on. But the council does not have absolute power in controlling public spaces. A lot of jurisdiction comes under the police with regards to certain things that may or may not happen in the park. I think if there are concerns that park may be misused, then we've got to look into the level of misuse. Certain offences can be governed under local government bylaws, such as like throwing your trash not in the bin, you know, or plucking out flowers or trees from the park. Those are the things that can be governed by a local government bylaw. But certain other things like alcohol consumption and any other activities, those should fall under the purview of the police. So it depends on what level of offences or discomfort we have towards that. The other thing that we could consider that has had some level of conversation in MBPJ is, do we want to close the parks at night? Do we want to say that, okay, you know, after 9 p.m. or after 7 p.m. the park is closed? It's only open during daylight. It's not open at night, so you can't come in, and then that puts an end to any sort of hanky-panky or violence or improper behaviour of any sort. So that conversation hasn't progressed very far. We have not had consensus to do so, but this is something that could be a possibility down the road if the community, by and large, wants it.
There's also the issue of homelessness.
All right.
Because parks can be a very welcome space for the homeless. In these instances, what should one do?
For any case of homelessness, you can report them to the welfare department. But in fact, somehow in Petaling Jaya, the homeless do not tend to congregate at parks, but rather at commercial areas like PJ Old Town. They do not, for some reason, they do not seem to go and make a home in parks. But wherever you find homeless people, you can always call the welfare department, and the welfare department does have a unit that comes and we definitely can offer them shelter. The only problem comes is when they refuse to take shelter that is offered to them.
Out of curiosity, you know, coming back to the playground in my neighbourhood, because it's the one I know best. Among the rules that are present on the board that you're not allowed to do includes cycling, you know, things like cycling, things like skating, things like walking your dog. And I understand the need for playground maintenance, but are these rules, how closely should people follow these rules? Because I can tell you, as somebody who has lived there my whole life,
people are not following these rules.
Unless it's convenient for them, until such a time when they want to point at it and say, you see, you're not supposed to cycle in here. But if not, you know.
I would admit, neighbourhood parks have a low level of enforcement. The rules are there. In fact, a lot of the rules are legacy rules. They've been there for ages. I think since 2008, since the government has changed, these rules have not been changed. So this has been inherited for decades. With regards to enforcing them or deciding whether we should amend them and so on, so far there has not been a strong demand.
I think because
people just by and large get along.
Yeah.
If cycling is tolerated in a neighbourhood and everyone just cycles and no one complains about other people cycling, then so be it. Likewise with walking a dog. Many parks, people walk their dogs and no one complains about it, then maybe so be it. Changing the rules would definitely be very controversial, be it from cycling to dogs to anything else. Definitely will be very controversial. And unless there's a strong demand in a particular direction, I don't see that happening anytime soon. What should happen is enforcement of certain rules, which I think all of us can agree to, such as littering. I think during hot peak hours, like say between 5 to 7 p.m., there should be random checks by enforcement officers to see if anyone is littering and to catch them at it. So maybe these are some of the things that could be looked at.
We visited this question earlier, but just to quickly revisit it because it's coming from a listener. Landed properties with gates and guards by resident associations, management with surrounding fences or walls, do they have the right to stop anyone from using the playground at any time?
Technically, no.
So, and so yeah, if you if you're encountering resistance, you can say technically you have no right to do this.
Yes. In fact, it goes beyond that. You can, those resident associations that run their own gated schemes, while they do provide a security deterrent to would-be criminals, so to maybe ask, to maybe deter them from trying this neighborhood, go try somewhere else. But they can't stop anyone who still wants to come in to visit anyone, to go to the park, the mosque, a school that may be within that gated community.
There was a second follow-up question from somebody else about the same thing. I hope that kind of answers it. Basically, it's not legal to keep people out from using parks. Okay. We have a phone call from Raj. Good afternoon, Raj.
Hi. Hi, Lynn. I have a question because I'm a dog lover and, and as you know, there are very few parks that are pet-friendly in a sense. And we have to go all the way to sometimes like Desa Park City, where else we live in, you know, in Shah Alam. So I want to know what are our rights in this sense, and, you know, what is probably the, you know, the right approach to this with regards to, you know, bringing your pet. And, you know, obviously we are responsible pet owners. So, you know, we want to exercise, but at the same time we want to walk our dog. I would love to hear the thoughts on this.
Thanks, Raj.
All right. I think this is one of the controversial points with regards to rules on using the park. And if council was to start opening this topic of whether we want to allow dogs or not, it would definitely be a very heated discussion.
On both sides,
on both sides,
imagine.
On both sides. And I totally understand the side of both sides of this debate. And one of the things that I'm trying to work on right now with a counsellor in PJ is to create a dog park. So we've identified actually a space that can be turned into a park, a new park. So we're not taking away an existing park away from some from the regular users, but to turn an unused area into a dog park. So there is some debate of maintenance and rules and how do we govern a dog park. And do you allow dogs to run free? Do they need to be on leashes and whatnot? And so that's ongoing at the moment, as well as the finances to get it up and running. But in terms of concept, it's being discussed right now. And hopefully by next year, we'll start to see something coming out of it. That may be the way to move forward, to create a specialized separate parks dedicated to dog owners and dog lovers.
What's the process of getting that up and running, a whole new park? How much would that cost?
I think that really depends on how much do you want to spend, because a park can be very, very cheap. I mean, if all you do is just cut the grass, put 5 benches and plant 10 trees, that's a very cheap park to get up and running. But if you want to put in more features into the park, so the cost can go up to millions of ringgit, it really, really depends on the council and so how far it wants to go. I think the complexity of the features in the park, to me, is secondary. I think the part which governs the usage of the park, like, you know, should dogs be on leashes or not? Should we give this public space for that purpose, or should we use that? Because land is precious in PJ, and there'll be some people that feel that we should not have to dedicate a park to this. So there's many opinions on the different side of the coin with regards to a park for dogs. But I, for one, am in favour of having one so dog lovers can go and exercise with their dogs.
If you've got a question today on managing parks and playgrounds, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, let's talk about resources. How do local councils allocate resources for park and playground maintenance?
Well, this is, in the bigger picture, decided by the council in its annual budget meeting. So every council will allocate a few percent of its budget towards parks. The larger amount of budget still goes towards things like our infrastructure, you know, roads, drains, streetlights and whatnot. But a certain amount goes towards parks. So if we talk about maintenance of parks, MPBJ puts in about 16.5 million ringgit a year into upkeeping of parks. So that's cutting grass, cleaning the parks, repairing broken items and so on. Should we put more? Should we put less? It's always a difficult question every year. If you were to put because we come to a consensus that we're not raising taxes in this few years. So we've got to work with the money that we have. If you were to put more into parks, it means cutting back on other things. Maybe cutting back on the money we spend on drain repairs, for example. So it's first of all the decision that council has to make on the bigger picture. How much goes towards parks? How much goes towards community halls? How much goes towards your markets? How much goes towards your sports facilities and so on? Then the second question comes down to, okay, now we've got 16.5 million for park maintenance. So what is our parameters? Do we want to, say, cut the grass once a month, or do we want to cut the grass twice a month? Now, if we cut the grass less at once a month, we save the grass cutting bill. We can use more money to do more maintenance on the equipment, say swings, slides, and whatnot. If you do tree trimming and grass cutting more frequently, then we have less money for the hardscape stuff like basketball rims and so on. So it's never an easy question to deal with in Malaysia. I think no council in Malaysia has a surplus of funds that they can do everything and anything they want to. So it's a difficult decision, and this is why we have 24 councillors in every council, and these 24 councillors debate and hash it out and come to a compromise. And that compromise is something that I guess it deems to be the consensus of some sort, rather than a one man making that decision.
29 parks were chosen by MBPJ for upgrading works this year. How do you prioritise which one to upgrade?
So once again, in the case of MBPJ, during this budget process, the specific parks are already chosen and picked at that stage. So once again, the 24 councillors play a vital role in pushing for a certain park over the other. Few factors come into play. One is the demand from the public. Complaints, let's say if SS2 has a high amount of complaints, strong demand, or let's say if SS5 has a petition signed by 500 people. So those help bump your requests higher up the list, as well as actual assessment, you know, to see which parks are actually in greater need for upgrade or repair. Is based on the usage. Do they have a high usage, or is only 5 people using the park every evening? And as well as the condition. Some parks are really more rundown because they have not been upgraded in a long time, so maybe they should take precedence. Never an easy question. I mean, I wish we can do much more than 29 a year. I really do. But doing 29 a year far exceeds the state government's target that he has placed on all the councils. So the target is 2 parks per every state constituency. So in PJ, we have 7 state constituencies, which means 14 park upgrades a year. But, you know, doing 29 is like It's double of that. So PJ is getting their park upgrades much faster than a lot of other parts of Selangor is. But it also has to come hand in hand with balancing the budget constraints that we have.
We have a phone call now from Mr. Lim. Good afternoon, Mr. Lim.
Good afternoon, Ling and Ravi.
Hi, good afternoon.
I just want a question. How often does MPPJ maintain the public park? For example, number 2 is the park where in Section 1721, Junction 21L. You see what happened? The swing there, underneath the swing there is a carpet. Now the trunk, the tree trunk is bottles out and is bolting, and the children play in the field. If they fall down, it definitely hurts the head. You see?
Okay.
So how often does they maintain it? Until today, the place is not maintained, and also is very dirty.
All right. 17/21. I'll take note of that and get MBPJ to drop by to visit that. In terms of maintenance, in general. When we say maintenance, we are referring to the regular work. So twice a month, MBPJ cuts the grass, and
that's
twice
correct.
A year, MBPJ trims trees that are needed to be trimmed. Not necessarily all trees, but twice a year, the trees are looked into, and what needs to be trimmed will be trimmed. But with regards to what you said, the roots that are protruding, affecting the play area, I think that that needs to be looked into. So if you notice something that MBPJ may have missed out, or in fact any other local council, Subang, Shah Alam, Klang and so on, you can easily drop in a request or complaint to the respective council. Most of the council's websites have a hotline number that you can call, or they have on the online form on the website that you can just fill it in and someone will look into it quickly. So I'll take note of your 17/21 park and get someone to have a visit soon.
Yeah, another thing is that the rubbish bin, the bin where you put all the rubbish.
All right.
They all collected and pile it up there inside the bin, but okay. No collection.
Oh, no, there should be collection. Collection is supposed to happen 3 times a week.
No. You can see that.
Okay. Thank you for highlighting that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lim.
Thank you, bye.
So, on that note about the trimming of trees, there's a story in the Star today about the chopping down of three old trees, that's a hard one to say, in an SS25 public field, which residents complained is against MBPJ's green initiative. What's the policy on cutting down trees?
Okay, I personally don't like cutting down trees. As far as possible, let's not cut down any tree unless we absolutely have to. So I can only think of two reasons to cut down trees. I'm sorry, I don't have the specifics for this particular case in SS25. But the first reason is because the tree is sick. So the tree is deemed by the council to be not healthy and at high risk of falling over. So we all don't want trees to fall over and hit cars or people and cause damage and harm. So if the tree is deemed sickly and in danger of falling over, that's one reason to have it cut down. The second reason for having a tree cut down, if it's in the way of some infrastructure work. So with the building of, let's say, the MRT lines, a number of trees were cut down. So trees that are cut down for these purposes are often replaced. Trees that are cut down because they are sickly are also often replaced. So one of the cases that happened in my area was in Section 6, where the palm trees were infested with termites. They were quite hollow in the middle of it, and at a high risk of falling over. So if they were to fall over, they could likely hit a car. So in the interest of safety, the palm trees were cut, but new trees were planted in its place to replace it. So yes, not for fun that trees are cut, but when necessary, they have to, then it's a necessary evil.
Why don't you let the private sector adopt and maintain your parks, the listener wants to know.
Happy to allow them to do so, if any of them were to come forward. And I think there's a few cases of private sector adoption in the country, but it's not very easy to find them.
Is it a requirement for every neighbourhood to have gazetted green lungs? I mean, in theory, it sounds great, but as you say, land is at a premium, mm-hmm. especially here in PJ.
All right.
So how does that work?
All right, so a very, very long time ago, there wasn't such requirements, but in more recent times, there's been a requirement for 10% of a development to be green. So any developer that's developing, say if you develop a 10-acre piece of land into housing, 1 acre of it must be green, a park or some sorts. And then now we have progressed on to a new standard that says 20 square meters of green space for every person. So that's the standard that we go by. So any new development that comes in would be subject to such requirements. However, if you look back at legacy developments, you know, developments 40, 50 years ago, they may not have been subject to such requirements.
We have people who are very in sync, actually. People earlier who asked about what happens when gated communities keep other people out have now texted in follow-up questions at the same time.
All right.
To say, so based on what we've said, how are you supposed to respond when the guards tell you, no, you can't park here? And who do you complain to when you're being kept out?
Okay, so if the guards still won't let you in and if you want to do something about it, maybe one option is to lodge a complaint with the respective local council. So if it's in PJ, MBPJ, if it's Subang, MPSJ. Not many self-gated communities actually resist people that strongly. If you insist on going in, they in my experience, they let you in.
I think there have been some negative experiences.
But if in the cases of those negative experiences, then maybe what you can do is to make a complaint with the local council.
There's also a concern that one or two complaints would not be taken seriously.
I wouldn't put it that way, but maybe a starting point to resolving this matter is to put in a complaint. But we got to really draw a distinction. I know it's not easy for the general public to draw that distinction between landed strata properties where the roads and the facilities inside are in the ownership of the strata owners. And in those cases, they control who can come in and who can't. So condominiums are very clear examples, but we also have a number of landed strata developments in recent times. So in those cases, then they do have their own say in regulating access. But with regards to ordinary neighbourhoods, say in Subang Jaya and Petaling Jaya, the older neighborhoods that have turned into gated and guarded schemes, that becomes a bit more tricky. By right, everyone has access to the facilities in there, and the guards can't refuse you. They can take down information to keep track for security reasons, so they can take note of your number plate and so on, but they can't stop you from going in.
And finally, to close off, what can local governments do in terms of improving the security of an area surrounding a playground or a public park? Because obviously this is of concern. We talked earlier about potential nighttime shenanigans, but yes, it's also a place where children play, and you want to be able to keep it as safe as possible.
So one of the things that have been done since 2008 is that most of the parks have since been installed with lights. So they are safer in the early hours of the morning and safer at night. And that will be probably the first wave of initiative. The lightings are somewhat complete in areas like Petaling Jaya. Nearly every park has some amount of lights. If there are any lacking parks or, you know, half-lit parks, so then they should be completed soon. That'll be like the first wave. But then maybe in the second wave, we can consider CCTVs to monitor parks. And that could be another step forward. But that also will require cooperation from the police to monitor them live, because just having the recordings may not be the best use of public funds to fix in the CCTV. So it all relates to cost, once again, deciding where the best bang for the buck is, because with limited finances, that's where the difficult questions come in. You know, do we want to put in CCTV in the parks, or do you want to spend that little bit of money to upgrade the playground facilities? Putting in a jungle gym for the children, or do we want to put in a CCTV? So I think that is where the more public feedback we get, you can write into your local councillors, you can write into your state assemblymen, write into your council. The more public feedback you channel in, the better the chance the decision goes in that favour to get the kind of improvements that we look for. In fact, all our parks tend to improve a lot. It's just a matter of what direction do we want to go down, you know, which area of focus do we want to spend on in this park. Space is precious. As we talked about earlier, we only have a certain amount of green lung. At least in PJ, we have gazetted our green lungs, so no private developer can buy them up. They will remain green lungs. But how do we want to best manage that space? Some neighborhoods, the parks may be as small as half an acre. Some parks may be as big as 5 acres. You know, different sizes in different neighborhoods. Some neighborhoods may have 4 small parks, some 1 big park. But regardless, how do you want to best utilize that? And this is where engagement comes into play and benefits. So if you have comments and you channel them to your representatives, that helps them when decision time comes around or the annual budget comes around to give a better perspective of what we should do.
I've been speaking today with Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman, and we've been discussing managing parks and playgrounds today on Live and Learn. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.